Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. This is Terry Dodd. This is Walls in Our Minds. Should be on with my co-host, Red Beckman. Red, are you there?
I'm on board.
Well, good evening, Red.
Well, good evening to you.
I think we may have a crapshoot going tonight to see who actually calls in here and talks with us tonight. There could be any one of about eight people, so I guess we'll just have to hold down the fort until some of them show up.
Sure enough, we can usually fill in. Excuse me.
Well, I've been doing a lot of that too, because I've been out on tractors and skid loaders and stirring up a lot of dust. So
we don't have any dust here.
You don't?
No. Longview, Washington just had broke their long-term record on rainfall for the month of May, and a record that was set in 1984, and had almost an inch more, I think, over 8 inches, I think it was, in May. And June isn't starting out any better.
Well, my original hometown, of course, my original hometown of Nashville, you know, they got 16 inches of rain in 3 days here, about, you know, before, as that flood happened.
Yeah, those country music people can write songs about the flood now,
I guess. So what's new with you, Red?
Well, I don't know. I'm so excited about, you know, what's happening worldwide and watching it happen. And it's just the thing that's going on in the Gulf of Mexico with that run, well, running wild. I'm quite sure, and I've got this on pretty good authority, that the Rothschild family are the control, they have the controlling interest in BP. And, excuse me, I'm having a problem here. But anyway, if that is the case, our paper here a couple of days ago said that the value of British Petroleum had gone down over $75 billion since this started. And of course, it has not stopped yet. And my oldest son, he worked in the oil patch back 20 years or so ago, and he's quite familiar with some of that stuff. And, you know, he says it was mishandled from the very beginning. They knew there were problems, and especially with that shutoff on the bottom, and they did nothing about it for 6 weeks. They knew that that thing was not functioning properly, and of course they tried to pump that mud in there, and they didn't have enough mud. I mean, they should have known. You know, that pipe is, I don't know, I think it's 16 inches in diameter or more. It's big. And they would have to pump an awful lot of mud in there. you know, theoretically, if you get enough mud in there, why, you can plug it, even with the pressure. You know, you pump that bentonite in there, and it expands. When it gets wet, why, it expands. And it just, they didn't have enough of it on hand. They didn't start out with enough to make it work. And so there's just been a lot of mistakes made. And, you know, you have to wonder if it isn't part of God's judgment on our land and on corporate America, corporate world corporations. BP, of course, is a world corporation. And, you know, when BP took over Texaco, and I don't remember how many ARCO, and I don't remember how many companies all told, there really, I don't think there was any amount of money that changed hands. It was all a paper shuffle. And basically, it was business operation trying to save taxes, get themselves into a position where they wouldn't be hit with so many taxes, and so it's corporate. Well, you know, I've explained it. I don't know if I've explained it on this program or not. How that corporations are creatures created by mankind. Governments, they create corporations, and so they are not, in this country here, a U.S. corporation is not, they do not have constitutionally secured rights, because they are entities, creatures, created by the state, not created by our Creator God, as you and I. And when we were created by the Creator, He created us, and we were to function in His likeness. We were to function in the likeness of our Creator. We were to be honest, straightforward, to be industrious and creative, and all of the attributes of our Creator were supposed to be very much a part of our lives. We were to operate in His likeness. Now, when a corporation is a creature created by the state, by government, they have a tendency to operate in the likeness of their creator. And so if the creator, the government that creates the corporation, if the government is corrupt, if it is evil, if it is, you know, operating on deceit and deception and fraud, then those creatures created by that entity are going to function in the likeness of their creator. And so the corporate world is a reflection of the political world that we live in. And a lot of people really don't understand that, and it needs to be understood by everybody that corporations have a tendency to, the stock in trade for corporations is deceit, deception, all kinds of, you know, evil and wickedness. And if we understand that, then we watch for it and identify it. We discern the nature of it if we're aware of it all. And so I just think it's one of the things that we need to understand.
Well, Red, I believe we have a guest online. Gene, is that you?
Yes, it is. Terry, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great. This is my good friend Gene Brokaw. He is the one of the delegates from Alaska for the Continental Congress, and he is also the chairman of the admin committee for the Third Continental Congress. Welcome, Gene. I am really glad to hear from you tonight. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing quite well, and Red, it's good to hear you also. We did meet in St. Charles I was there for your discussion and enjoyed it a great deal. And thanks to our friend Dan Gonzalez, I am now the chair of the Administration Committee of the Third Continental Congress, and am enjoying it quite a great deal. We're just getting a good start on our activities, but with God's help, we intend to take our country back. And that's precisely the purpose of the Third Continental Congress, is to return us to a constitutional government as our forefathers and founders initiated it, to be a republic, not a democracy or oligarchy or any other statist type of government.
And a Christian nation.
Absolutely.
Gene, are you a long-time resident of Alaska?
Not long-term. I've been here about 13 years.
Back in the 80s, we ran, I don't remember, 3 or 4 one-hour TV specials up there in Alaska.
Oh.
And I was up there one time about 81 or 82, and they couldn't find a place big enough in Anchorage for the crowd they anticipated, and so they got a hangar at the airport, and they got every folding chair that they could find loose in town, and they figured there was over 800 people there that night to get in on the after the program, after the television. That was run one evening, prime time, and then the next evening we had the public meeting, and they figured there were over 800 people there for that. And it was an interesting situation because everybody was sitting on a folding chair. And, of course, they had a good PA system and all, and it worked very well. And, of course, I had a schedule to make, and I flew out of there that night about 1 o'clock in the morning on, what did they call those flights at night? They got a
red
eye.
Yeah.
And there was an attorney up there at the same time that I knew, Bill Cohan, and he was up there working with some other attorneys on strategies and such. And Bill and I were sitting together. It was on a DC-10 that we were riding, and the pipeline was in full bore then, and they were a lot of pipeline workers on the flight. But it was really kind of crazy because Bill and I were having a major discussion before we ever got off the ground. And Bill made the statement. He said, we're going to have to decide in this country whether we're going to buy guns or butter. Butter, I think it was, he said. And just as he said that, this little stewardess had walked by and she heard that word bomb. Wow. I was sitting closest to the aisle, and this little gal, she was all business, and she was going to read the riot act, and boy, they were just like two fighting cats spitting in each other's face, and
in the middle.
She wanted to throw him off of the plane, you know, because he used the word bomb, and he said, lady, he said, I am an attorney. If you want a lawsuit, you just go ahead. And she backed off in a hurry, but it was it kind of capped a very long day for me.
I am sure it did, to say the very least. Yes, 800 people in one place in Anchorage in the 80s was a major group, because there were not that many people living in Anchorage in the 80s. most of the people.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I think they figured 100 to 200,000. Were you there the year that the Sound froze over and the supply ship couldn't make it up to dock in Anchorage? I remember what year that was.
Yeah, that has happened.
It's happened more than once, yes.
And they, we had a situation a few years ago where Cook Inlet froze up, and it ripped a tanker from its mooring and sent it down the inlet because of the ice flows. And they managed to catch it further down the inlet, and it wasn't damaged. It just ripped itself loose. So ice is a major consideration here in the winter.
Yeah, well, the time that I was thinking of, it was 40 below with about a 50-mile-an-hour wind, and the word got out that the supply ship wasn't going to come in. And one of the people up there called me on the phone and told me what was happening, how that the word got out on the news in the afternoon that that ship was not going to make it in. And so people went out in that terrible weather, and within a couple of hours, all the stores in town, their shelves were stripped. People bought everything they could get their hands on because they were afraid that they might be without that supply ship that comes in once a week.
And it's a very real fear when that happens.
It's a major calamity if that happens, because everybody in Anchorage and even Fairbanks, pretty much dependent on that supply ship. There's one ship that comes in special with all those trailers on it, refrigerated trailers and heated trailers and such. And
that's Totem Trailer Express. They come out of Tacoma, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weekly run, but there's been several times that they've not been able to get into the dock. And in fact, the day my shipment got here, it was some 30 degrees below zero, and fortunately they had made it into the dock, so I was able to get my things, but it was certainly interesting. Someone there just managed to just touch the grill of my car, and it just shattered.
Hmm. Wow. Gene?
Yeah, we kind of got away from Continental Congress here. That's my fault.
That's okay. I just want to let you guys know that our good buddy Dan Gonzalez, president of the Third Continental Congress, is now on a live mic with us too. But Gene, before I let Dan jump in here, I have a question for you. The question is, what if the ship comes in with the goods, but when they go to offload it, it's learned that the prices of all the goods have doubled? What would happen then?
That would be quite an interesting proposition. They would no doubt offload it and get it to the merchants as soon as humanly possible and reap the rewards of that double price. Because the price had not doubled when the ship departed Tacoma.
Well, don't be surprised if later this year, as the value of our fiat Federal Reserve notes crashes, that something like that would be what you would experience.
Something like that could most certainly happen, but the goods are all paid for when they're loaded in Tacoma aboard the ship. So if there's a major price change while the ship is en route, which is about a five-day trip, then the merchants will certainly reap the rewards. And those of us that have to pay the prices will be very upset.
No doubt. But I believe that with the government doing what they're doing right now, I believe that the only reason we're not already seeing extreme actions like that happening is because they've been actually manipulating the prices to keep them from going crazy just yet. One of the places that they've done that has been with the price of silver.
Yes.
And Dan, feel free to jump in here anytime you want to, by the way.
Well, thank you, Terry. I'm just enjoying listening to you guys.
The price of crude oil is one you want to watch, much the same as you watch the price of silver. And crude oil has been coming down, and a lot of people thought that it would go up because of the problem in the Gulf. But the truth is that there is an oversupply of crude oil, but they've been pushing that price down, and the price of gas has come down considerable in the last month. And silver, of course, they're manipulating that price, and that game is going to end one of these days, I suspicion. The manipulators in London and places like that, I think they're going to I think they're going to make some major mistakes, and when they do, then we the people, of course, are probably going to we'll probably come out very well, because I don't think the price will go that high. I think that it'll be. I don't think the price of gold. I'm not a gold nut at all. I just don't think that gold is going to go near as high as what they anticipate. If it goes as high as they are saying, why, it'll be manipulation. There's a massive amount of gold out there, and people just don't realize how much there is, and so.
Who knows the spot prices on both gold and silver? Anybody know the spot prices on either one of those right now?
I haven't seen today. I haven't looked.
Well, what was it the last time you looked?
Yesterday, they were down yesterday. Silver and gold were both down yesterday. I don't pay
what?
That much.
So is silver like, what, 1850, 19? What is it?
About 18, low 18 and something.
Okay, and what's gold? Is it still up around 1200?
Yeah, close. Yeah.
Can anybody divide the bigger number by the lower number? Let's say silver is 20 and gold is 1200, just hypothetically. What's 20 into 1,200?
Well,
about 60,
about,
isn't it?
Yeah. That's 60 to 1. And that's way out of balance.
Historically, the ratio between gold and silver is 16 to 1. 1/6 to 1.
And it hasn't been there for a long time, Terry.
Well, but...
It was 35 to 1 for many years under, because of FDR and what he did and such, 35 to 1. And when we had the silver cartwheels around wearing out our pockets, and we still loved them in Montana, we weren't too happy when they went to all that paper money.
Yes, and
the
so,
point is that it's going to eventually approach that ratio again.
I would not be a bit surprised. There's been a lot of people buying gold, and I think it's a mistake because when we get reduced to an economy where we're just basically trying to stay alive and be able to buy a loaf of bread and such, then gold is not the exchange mechanism that you want. And back when in the 70s, I told people, I said, I anticipate seeing the day when a silver dime would probably buy a pretty good steak in a restaurant. And, of course, we just about did that in January in 1980. It came awful close. In Montana, I'm sure there were some restaurants where you could have had one of the old skinny dimes, silver dimes, and you probably could have bought a fairly decent steak with it because they run silver up pretty high. And but it didn't last. And it went down, and of course gold, there was so much mined, there was so much gold that was mined, that it was coming out of the ground at, you know, at a rate never before in history, thousands of tons of it. We're not talking about hundreds of tons, we're talking about thousands of tons of it that was coming out of the ground worldwide. And you know, it'd be real interesting to know where that gold is all at today. A lot of it is concentrated in Switzerland, I can assure you of that. But who claims ownership of it and such, that's something we don't know. I'm sure the Rothschilds claim ownership of a lot of it. But it's not going to be a problem when we come to a point where we can have justice once. It won't be hard to prove that the Rothschilds are a bunch of crooks, and they stole that silver and they stole that gold, and they're going to lose it because they were a bunch of thieves. And the people of this country, of the world, it's the people of the world that are going to speak up, and they're going to say no more. We've had enough of those people. They have created such chaos on this planet. In our economies and everything, that when their day of settlement comes, why, it's not going to be good for them.
Well, Dan, I'm glad you made it on tonight. I was missing you last week when you got caught up in that meeting, and just glad to hear your voice. And would you like to give us an update as to kind of what's been going on? I missed your show last night, so if you want to share with us a little bit about that, that would be great, too.
Well, thanks, Terry. Hello, Mr. Beckman. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and good to hear you.
Thank you. And hello there, Gene. How are you up there in Alaska?
I'm doing quite well, Dan, and I did catch a good portion of your show and enjoyed it a great deal yesterday. And it's good to hear your voice.
You bet. Same here. It's really interesting that we had, I believe Satan was really trying to get us last night. You know, we were exposing his evil deeds, and we had a bit of a strife on my program, and really actually between my co-host and myself, and you know, we started, I don't know what triggered it, but I think that it was, I've talked to a few people about it already, and I think it was basically Satan was attacking us because we were attacking him, and we were exposing, you know, his evil deeds and what he's doing. And but the good news is that we have, we were talking about, you know, convicting men to step forward and be men and take their place as God intended them to be, the leaders of their families and communities and so on. And I just got off the phone a little while ago with Sheridan, and she has that, you know, she's one of the, what would you call it, co-authors of that a Facebook site. You know, we want an investigation into the death of Nancy Schaefer.
Yeah.
And about five or six men came forward and volunteered and step forward, you know, right after the program was over. They just, within 1 hour, there were five or six, she said, men that stepped forward and said, look, you know, as a man, I want to get involved and do something about this. So, and then there were other good things that followed after that. But, you know, I was I was basically last night, you know, really talking about the true problem in America today, and it's a touchy topic these days. And if you don't believe so, well, just go into any Bible study in America on Sunday morning or on Wednesday night, whatever, it doesn't matter where, go to any Bible study, open up the Holy Word of God and go, and you know, you make sure there's mixed company, you know, couples, husbands, wives, so on. Open up that word, start reading about the role of women in the family, and you're going to get attacked, you know, because there are, you know, Satan has of course, and I led it back to Eve and Eve's rebellion in the garden, and you know, the whole Word of God is a book of conviction. His Word is convicting, at least it is for me. I mean, I can't read His Word without being convicted of the truth, and I guess it's because, you know, when Eve took the bite of that apple and she knew evil. And then talk Adam into it, and Adam bit the apple and took the apple, the forbidden fruit, and then he knew evil. And then once man has known evil, now evil is there, and you know, we can't cut it out of ourselves. Still, it's gonna be there. Our flesh is gonna war against our spirit. I mean, we know that from reading the Word. So that Holy Word is conviction, and the moment we think that it isn't, I think we're in trouble. I don't know about other people, but, you know, it seems like I can never be good enough, to be honest with you. I'm continually convicted by it, constantly, you know, measuring my character to it, my inner thoughts, my desires, and my integrity or whatever I am, I'm constantly comparing it in measuring it to God's holy word, you know, and to every word I read is, you know, what am I learning here? What is God showing me? What is the Holy Spirit revealing to me? Because, of course, in the book of Genesis, you know, that the word is living and that the word is God. And so that's God in essence, you know, I'm making a connection there. And it's not my interpretation. I mean, when it says in the Word for women to submit to your husbands, that's what it means. When God says, do not sin, that's what it means. When He says, do not commit adultery, that's what it means. When He says, you know, do not steal, or whatever He is teaching us, that's exactly what He means. I don't think there's any other way to interpret it. You know, God, and I did say last night in my program that, you know, I was chastising the men of America for not being men and stepping up to the plate and saving the women and children. You know, we have you know, these TV programs, Sex in the City, Cougar, Desperate Housewives, and I was talking about this new program they're going to have this summer for teenagers. They're going to be launching it for the summertime so they can completely contaminate and brain soil, you know, the teenagers and turn them into the young women into little whores and the young men into feminists, you know what I'm saying? Into little feminine men and with no backbone and no spine, not willing to stand up for anything. And of course that's a design. That's a grand conspiracy. And we know who the great conspirator is. But I was attacked for saying those things. And I was kind of surprised, but then again, not really. And,
yeah,
you know,
pardon me? I think both you and Rich were under attack.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty interesting, but, you know, you can't stand up for what's right and not be under attack. I mean, we know we're going to get attacked, no problem. I just, I think that something triggered Richard, and he got upset with me, and, you know, we still need to work that out, but I have full confidence and faith in the Lord that we will, because, you know, we're brothers, and we will work that out. And but something, it was really interesting how it all occurred. And it's just proof that Satan is going to come against us and attack us, and, you know, he's going to try to destroy what we're doing when we're lighting the lamp, you know, the lamp of liberty, the torch, you know, God's light, when we're bringing the light into the darkness, and we're exposing the darkness. You know, the darkness doesn't want us to do that, and so we're going to be attacked for it, and we need to stand strong together. And I have to tell you, you know, I'm only a man, and I need other men. I need brothers around me who can convict me, who are men of wisdom that can convict me and help me stay on track also. You know, to other men that I am actually accountable to those men. I think all men need that. And we need to be accountable to other men. And because if we're not, then, you know, I feel in dangerous waters. You know, we need to have that conviction, that accountability. So it was all good stuff. We had we were really exposing the evil, you know, with of course, you know, you guys know about this, you know, the terrible things that are happening to children and how they're disappearing and just gone, you know, just vanished. They're gone. Like Bill Bowen came on the program last night, called in, and he said those children are just, they're gone somewhere. Somebody has them. Somebody's not calling to collect the money on them either. So that even makes it more suspect, because, you know, all those children, there's money. There are people, when those children go into foster homes, the foster parents get paid, right? They get paid to watch those children. That's how it works. And sure, there are good people that love children, and I know that, and that sometimes adopt them and stuff, because I know that, because I have those kind of people in my family. You know, I have two uncles that were foster parents, and they actually adopted children into their family when they already had lots of children. It's amazing, but those children are my cousins today. They're like family. So I do know that there are good people that do that, but there are children that are missing, and no one's calling up and saying, where's my paycheck for watching this child? So there's some very, it's by design that these children are missing.
And they are now slaves, and that's the problem. We need to try and stop that.
Or dead. Some of them are dead.
Yeah, some of them have been sacrificed. That's right. They've been actually sacrificed, and which is, you know, that's a real scary thing for people to face. But a lot of people in the chat room last night were saying, you know, I don't want to think about this. I don't like to talk about this. It bothers me too much. Well, what about the kids? What about the children? I mean, how much do you think it bothers them? You know, can't we suffer a little bit? Can't we handle the pain? And this is what I'm talking about, the men. I'm not talking about the women here, because I believe that God, you know, again, God commanded man to lead his family and lead his community. So it's up to us men to face that pain and walk through it. And that's why we have the Lord, so that we can go to him, and he can empower us and strengthen us spiritually to be able to handle this. But we have to go, and that's why we're the warriors. That's why the women aren't the warriors. We, the men, are the warriors. We have to be warriors and go and save these children. And I don't know, you know, last night, Terry, I don't know, we can talk about this. I thought, you know, what we need to do, maybe what we need to do is we need to have a militia of men that are a particular militia, or a militia created specifically to save children. Because obviously our government is not going to do it. Law enforcement is not doing it. And we know that even the FBI was involved in covering this stuff up. So who's left? Who's going to save the children?
Well, the only place that the well-regulated militia can operate really is within its own state. I assume that there could be some information sharing going on between the states, but the well-regulated militias answer to when needed, the governor of each state, even though they're not organized by the governor. They're organized from the grassroots level, but they are subject to the call of the governor. And for them to go interstate, I think, would be a problem. But there's other ways to accomplish that. Right now, the big thing is that it's all being covered up. I mean, the lamestream media, you know, just feeds us stories as though some criminal out there has done something to some child. And, you know, they're not going to talk about the fact that there's an organized group of people, some of which are a part of our shadow government, and some of which are actually a part of our actual Congress, that are participating in these sex slave and Luciferian ceremonies where they actually sacrifice these kids and or have sex with them. Why aren't they telling the truth about Barney Frank? Why aren't they telling the truth about Dennis Hastert?
Right.
You know,
Mr. Vice President, I'd like to ask you a question. When you chaired the Second Amendment Committee in St. Charles, what did you come up with, your committee come up with as a definition of the militia? Because this has been something that many people, I remember we were talking about this, all of us, and we need to have a definition of what a militia is. And what was that?
Well, in order to really get into the correct definition of the well-regulated state militia, you really have to do some digging, and the person that's the expert on that is Dr. Edwin Vieira. And Vieira contributed, we actually had a committee meeting where we called Vieira up and had him on a speakerphone and allowed the committee to ask questions, because I had extensive conversations with Dr. Vieira, so I had a really good feel for what the militia was all about. The militia really was organized through the churches of the colonies at the time of the Revolutionary War. But basically, the militia was the entire citizenry.
Amen.
And it had different levels of function. In other words, the men that were like 17, 18 through like upper 40s or close to 50 years old, like 47, 48 years old, those were your primary first responders. You know, if there was a problem, they were the ones that were going to be called out first. But older men could be called out too if needed. But you need to understand that even the butcher or the tailor of the town, who may not have been called out to fight on the front lines, was still a part of the militia, because they supplied the food or the clothes or the uniforms and things to the militia, or put the ammunition together or made the guns. Those were people who were working in the factories or the shops. They were also a part of the militia because they had their duty to it. The thing that you need to understand is that the Second Amendment, and I think a clear description of this for the listeners is important. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, are declarative and restrictive statements. So when you look at the Second Amendment, anybody got it handy, by the way, or do I need to dig it out real quick? Because I want to read it precisely.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Okay, let's break that down. So the restrictive, the declarative portion of that is that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. That's the declarative statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make the point that the word necessary there, that's the only thing in the whole Constitution that is stated as being necessary. The Congress isn't necessary, the President's not necessary, the Supreme Court's not necessary, but the well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of free state. And then the second part of this, which is what everybody focuses on, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That is related to the declarative statement.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the reason the right for the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed is because the well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state. So what is the militia? The militia is the homeland security force for a free state. That's what the militia is. And back at the time of the Revolutionary War and our founders and the founding of the country, a widow would be fined if she failed to buy her son a gun. They supplied guns to the households, and they required that every household be armed because every household was a part of the militia.
Exactly. So there's no way to separate. There's no way to separate us then, Terry. We could surmise there's no way to separate a free people from actually being a militia. We
correct.
Automatically are a militia because that's part of the security of our state, to the security that goes to the security of our state, the security of our homes. If we don't have that, then we don't have the security. We're vulnerable. Our homes can be raided. Our children can be taken from us as they are right now. So
you need to understand the mindset of the founders. What had they just done when they wrote this Constitution? What had they just done? They had just fought against a standing army.
That's right.
It was their army. They were British citizens.
Right.
Correct?
Absolutely. They were under the British Constitution. That's correct.
Okay. So they knew the danger of a standing army. We have
Absolutely.
A standing army.
Absolutely.
And that standing army represents a threat to the security of the free state.
That's right. Absolutely. Especially the way it's controlled right now by the tyrant in the White House. You know, the tyrants that have been in the White House, they've used that, ever since Abraham Lincoln, they've used that military to their own purpose, to perform their own evil. And again, that's exactly what our founding fathers, wrote what they did in the Constitution, especially like with supplying the military, for no longer than 3 years in time of peace. Of course, we're in perpetual war any longer, so, the military, is funded with billions and billions of dollars and at the command, everything, of course, has been taken out of context. And again, just like God's holy word, taken out of context, it means something different that it didn't mean. But then the Lord said that in the word. What they're going to tell you, what's sweet is sour, what's sour is sweet, what's day is night, what's night is day. They're going to turn everything upside down and inside out. And we can look at, sodomites, we call them gay now. Little children holding hands, singing songs are gay, but these guys are perverted. They're sinners. So we look at how words have been used to change things, and this is what I'm getting to, what I wanted to, get to a little bit earlier about the militia. These children are suffering, and we have the right. We have the right as children of God, as free men, to stand up and save those children. I mean, if we don't have the right to save the children, and we don't have the right to protect our families, we don't have any rights. We don't have anything. We're fooling ourselves. But we need to start standing strong right in the face of tyranny and telling them, and we need to do it, in submission to God and say, we're not going to take this anymore. We're not going to submit to you. We're not going to allow you to take our children captive and violate them and molest them and do these vile things to them. We're not going to take this anymore. Are we capable of doing that? Do we have enough men in this country who have enough intestinal fortitude, character, virtue to step forward and to get that job done? I know one thing. I sometimes don't think that we do. And I think we need to think about this. Not that it's up to us, but maybe we need to pray more. Maybe we need to supplicate more to the Lord to ask Him to please, raise up an army, a of righteous men who will fight, not just prayer warriors. Because men have to, you know, faith without works is dead. We have to take action. Our founding fathers had to take action, didn't they? They had to take action to win their liberty. They just didn't sit around and go, okay, we're just going to pray. We're just going to stay in this church and pray, and that's all we're going to do. They took action. And many of them died.
Well, Dan, I'd like to, I've got a lot to say about what you're talking about. You touched on something earlier. You talked about relationships. You talked about men being accountable to men.
Yeah.
The Bible, you know, the scripture is iron sharpens iron. That's what it's talking about. It means it takes a man to hold a man accountable the same way it takes a woman to hold a woman accountable.
Yeah.
Because iron sharpens iron, and we've got different makeup and chemistry and there, it just, you know, we think differently. I had a conversation and Red heard a little bit of this yesterday. We were on a call with the American Leadership Network, which is affiliated with AVID, which is the American Veterans in Domestic Defense. There's a guy named Jim Borland who wrote a book called The Ensign. And the ensign, of course, is actually a scriptural term. And an ensign is a banner or a flag. And in this case, Jim has put the concept out there that we need to educate everyone about the ensign of our country. And the ensign of our country is the basic principles of the Constitution, which starts with the fact that we've got our unalienable rights from the Creator, from God. And, you know, that also is a scriptural concept. Well, you know, I chimed in and said, hey, look, you can wave any flag, any banner. You can talk about, you know, the church is being deceived. You can talk about whether the fact that we need to revitalize our grand juries. We need to restore de jure governments in our county and state level. We need to revitalize the militia. You can talk about all of the basic principles of the Constitution and that it's a trust agreement and that it's not where we get our rights. You can bring out all these principles. You can talk about FIJA and putting their DVDs into the churches. But I'm here to tell you that relationship that you're talking about, where there is some natural accountability, is where is what's missing. It was statistics that came out of the Promise Keepers back in the mid-90s. They basically proved statistically that only 1 out of 20 Christian men have a close confidant relationship with another Christian man, somebody who can be a positive influence on their life, whether they're a peer or a mentor or they're the mentor, you know. You need relationships where there's natural accountability. And they found that only 1 out of 20 Christian men had that kind of relationship. Now, they also proved that only 1 out of 10 men, Christian men, would make a positive change in their life if they heard a truth. They determined that 80%, 1 out of 10 won't ever make a change no matter what, but 80% only make a positive change in their life in the context of a relationship. And if only 1 out of 20 has that kind of a relationship, then how do we expect there to be any positive change in the lives of these men? You're talking about men getting involved in an activity where we are well-regulated and prepared to protect our children, to protect our communities, to protect our states. Those are huge positive changes that have to be made in men's lives.
Yes.
They're not going to do it in the absence of those kind of relationships. We've got to get outside of our homes. We've got to go to our churches. We've got to build those relationships. And I talked to Frank Williams, and Frank would be on tonight, but he's in a meeting with a big Tea Party deal going on tonight, or he would be here having this discussion with us. And maybe next week he'll be here and maybe bring the leader of that very astute leader of the Tea Party that he's listening to him speak tonight. He may bring him on with him next Thursday night. So I'm looking forward to that. But What I said to Frank was, Frank, what did Jesus do? Jesus did not have 40 or 50 or 100 close relationships. You know, the song says he came from heaven to earth to show the way. I believe that's true.
Mm-hmm.
He came to show the way. He showed us what a man is capable of doing when he was here. He had three close confidants. He had 12 fairly close confidants. But he had three that were really close to him.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right? Am I right? Are you following my drift?
Yeah,
he could
have had
50 or 100 or 1,000 close to him because he was capable of doing that. But he showed us what a man is capable of. And we need to follow that example. We need to have three guys, at least three guys, that are close enough to us that we can hold them and they can hold us accountable. And we need to have another 12 or so that we are discipling or that we are reaching out to, that we have at least a rapport with, a sufficient amount that we can learn together and then go out from there and have a grassroots effort that's going to make these kind of positive changes throughout the country. Now, this sort of thing doesn't happen overnight, but, you know, all of these plans and ideas that have been thrown out there by different organizations, whether it's Committees of Safety or We the People Foundation or Campaign for Liberty, you know, We Are Change, I don't care who it is, that, you know, they've all got these great silver bullet ideas, but the fact of the matter is that none of them work.
Right.
Because they're top-down organizations. All of them are top-down organizations. The one thing that's great about the Tea Party is that they at least have some grassroots effort to it. The 912ers, you know, the precinct groups, those are groups that do have some grassroots efforts. But it takes that kind of relationship to make positive changes in people's lives. It's just not going to happen overnight. And when we wake up to that fact and we realize that as a part of this educational process, like Red's been doing for decades now, that you've got to have an accountability relationship situation, and then it ripples out from you. It ripples out from you being the big frog in your small pond.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll shut up and let you guys talk, but I'd like some feedback on what I just said from you guys.
I think you're absolutely correct, Terry, and we need a lot more of that. We need that leadership from one person to another. And it doesn't take hundreds of people. It takes a few people to guide and direct the hundreds and thousands. And that's where we need to go. And Dan, I'm sure you have things to say about it too. Go ahead.
Well, I just noticed that Jim Borland is in our chat room, and I just asked him to call in and join this conversation because he's the one that wrote the book about the incident, and I believe that that's a powerful message that he's got. I just think that we've got to be able to take these kind of powerful messages and apply them in a way that it's going to have a permanent, long-standing impact and grow. And I'm just hoping Jim will call in and join us. I'm going to throw the number down here so that he can see it. We're up against a break. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Balls in Our Mind.
How could I stand here and watch the sunrise? The mountains where they touch the sky, ponder the vastness in the depths of the sea, and think for a moment the point of it all was to make much of me. I'm just a whisper, and you are the thunder, and I wanna make much of
Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm along with my co-host, Red Beckman, and we're here with the president of the Third Continental Congress, Dan Gonzalez, and the chairman of the admin committee of the Third Continental Congress, Gene Brokaw. And I'm hoping that Jim Borland's going to call us up. But Janet, I don't see any word that we've got anybody. Oh, Jim's on live mic. Jim, welcome to Walls in Our Minds.
There we go. Good evening.
Jim, give us a little background on the ensign, please. It's been a while since you were on here with us, and I know that our listeners would like to know more about that. How do they find the ensign? Where can they get information on that? And give us a little background of what that is.
I hear you. Can you hear me?
Hear you loud and clear.
Okay, good. The ensign is about a 22-year research effort of kind of homeschooling myself on things I probably should have been taught in school. It's basically just a codification of the basic core precepts and principles that are already there in our founding documents. They're just organized in a kind of innovative way. They encapsulate six precepts out of the Declaration of Independence. One is governance according to the laws of nature and nature's God. That's the first one. I don't think that's so ambiguous that we shouldn't have a clue as to who that is. Our forebears seemingly understood who it was, and on top of the Supreme Court, you've got Moses holding the Ten Commandments. So pretty indicative that the Ten Commandments were a foundational pillar for our laws. The second precept is self-evident truths. The broader application of that should be that we shouldn't debate things like marriage. We should affirm them as being self-evident, and we understand them through thousands of years of experience that marriage is between a man and a woman. And it's really not open for debate. It should be affirmed as such. English should be affirmed as the official language of our country. One of the things you have to do to get citizenship in this country is demonstrate a proficiency in the language. What does that denote? That English is the official language. We don't need a law stating the obvious. The next precept is that all men are created equal. They are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Number four is that government must be established by the consent of the governed on a foundation of principles, calculated, and I use that word liberally, calculated, because that's not in the Declaration, but government must be established by the consent of the governed on a foundation of principles calculated to most likely affect safety and happiness. Now, the unique thing about that precept there, if you go to the Constitution and you try to identify where is a set of enumerated foundational principles that would most likely affect our safety and happiness, I think we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge all six of those that are enumerated in the first sentence of the rule book. Yet we don't put a lot of emphasis on the preamble, but yet in the Declaration it says that you establish your government on a foundation of principles that would most likely affect your safety and happiness. Legal scholars don't give any credence to the preamble as having any legal bearing. The next precept is number five, which is profound, out of the Declaration. It says, prudence will dictate that government long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, nor abolish the forms to which they are accustomed. And that's condensed from its original form in the Declaration, because the language of the Declaration goes over the tops of most of our heads. It did for mine for a long time, until enough repetition that I was able to pick up on the gist of what it was trying to communicate. But basically that precept is saying you don't change your government on a whim, and you don't abolish the forms to which you're accustomed. When you start redefining marriage, that's a radical departure from established order. When you knock out a foundational pillar like the Ten Commandments and say that they're no longer applicable, that's a radical departure from established order and an abandonment of custom. When you give a woman the right to terminate the life of her unborn child, again, it's a radical departure from established order. And then number six from the Declaration, opposing with manly firmness the right of the people, opposing with manly firmness having rectitude of intent, meaning having moral uprightness, the right and duty of the people to throw off destructive government, having a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. So that's the organic foundation that establishes what the Constitution should be grounded in. In chronological order, if you've established the Declaration as your organic foundation, the next thing you establish is your structural foundation. And in chronological order comes next the preamble. And those six principles in the preamble are universal and timeless. They apply to all people, not just Americans, people everywhere. And you never want to stop promoting any of them. So together, those two constitute, which is what you termed and what I've described as the constitutional ensign to the nation, and ensign being banner or standard. The superstructure, which is the main body of the Constitution, rests on those two foundations. And as long as the main body of the Constitution is interpreted from those two foundations, then you've got a stable base to operate from. But if we don't clearly define what those principles and precepts are, then freedom and liberty gets to be all over the map. And my biggest discouragement right now is that we don't seem to be able to unite on anything. We don't have a universal focal point. We don't have a banner or standard that we are that communicates in a succinct way what it is that we believe. And I contribute that to the fact that I think that the country is under, I think we're just under a delusion. We can't see the things that we need to see. We don't have the capacity to unite. Division, dissension seems to be the rule of the day. But I think we've really brought it on ourselves. We've disavowed the acknowledgement of God in this country, and we broadcast some of the crappiest behavior around the globe and in front of our own kids. I think we're just reaping the whirlwind. Probably hasn't gotten to the whirlwind stage yet, but it's on the threshold.
Well, I think it has gotten to that point. Jim, thanks for doing that. I want to continue our discussion, Jim, where we talked about the Third Continental Congress while we've got Dan Gonzalez and Jean Brokaw and also Kate, who's in the background. She hasn't said anything yet, but she's there, all of which are key players in this Third Continental Congress. And I'd like for us to talk about how we can incorporate your wisdom and your research and the ensign into what we're doing as a part of the Third Continental Congress, so that we can basically have this as a banner, as a mission statement, if you will, or an ensign, we can even call it, for the Third Continental Congress. And I'd like for us to have some interaction. But before we go there, Red's been silent for a long time, and I just want to check in with him to see if there's something he would like to inject at this point.
I've been listening, of course, and I think that, excuse me, I think that, you know, we're putting, we're getting ahead of ourselves many times. We're talking about militia, and I've done lots of that myself, and of course I wrote the book, Why the Militia? And we have a tendency to, you know, look at the area that we're in, and basically we don't back up and look to see where we failed. Why are we in this position? Why are we in such a situation to where we're thinking about the militia and planning and trying to figure out the mission of the militia and all of that? We have leapfrogged over one of the basic principles of our political system is designed by the founders when they wrote the Declaration of Independence and when they created the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We have not done a good job of educating our fellow Americans on the function of the grand jury and the jury. And this has really been brought to my attention here. And if Dr. Kate is there, I'm glad she's there. She's from Wyoming. And I'm thinking, you know, I was just in Montana a week or so ago, and I've had some conversation with people, and we've got three states, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, that are experiencing a very, very, very serious situation where the government, the federal government, encroached on the rights of the states, those three states, and the prairie wolf, the timber wolf, I should say, I guess, was wiped out in Montana. The last one that I know of that was killed in Montana that got any attention was in 1939 or 40. If I remember right, it was 1940. And that wolf was mounted, and it was in the big Metropolitan Museum in Washington, D.C. They had to kill those wolves off because they were threatening livestock and such, and they are not a good neighbor in a civilized society. And so they brought those in, and the damage that has been done by that action of the government. Now, they took our money. They took our money, and they spent millions upon millions of dollars to bring these Canadian wolves down, and now they are causing unbelievable problems. And the Fish and Game Department in Montana, we had one of the greatest areas for elk hunting in the United States, in western Montana. A couple of days ago, the Fish and Game announced that they are not going to have an open season on big game in Montana next year because the wolves have cut down the population so drastically. And they're telling the hunters in western Montana that they're going to have to go to eastern Montana to find a place to hunt. Now, how did this happen? How could this happen? It happened because the American people have not been taught anything about grand juries and juries. Nothing. And so what I have recommended to the people in Montana is that they get their heads together, and Wyoming and Idaho need to do the same thing, basically do it at the same time. And I said, we the people have to take our power back. This is what I spoke on at that rally in Missoula about 10 days or so ago. We've got to take our power back, and we need to open the season on the wolves. We the people, not the Fish and Game, not the Fish and Wildlife Service, but we the people. These wolves are killing our elk and our deer and our moose. They've just about wiped out the moose in most of Montana at this point. And so we the people have to announce that we're going to open the season on such and such a day. And we're going to challenge the Fish and Game Department. We're going to challenge the Fish and Wildlife Service, the National. We're going to challenge them and say, you go out here and you arrest somebody for shooting a wolf. And that person is going to demand a jury trial. And we're going to have the juries in Montana educated. We're going to use this wolf question to educate the people in the state of Montana about their power on a jury. We're not talking about militia. We're talking about the juries and the grand juries that were put in the system, prior. The militia only takes hold and starts its activities once the grand jury and the jury are totally out of business. The jury, the grand jury, and the trial jury are the almost, they're the next to last check in the system of checks and balances. The militia is the last check in the system. And we're not at that point yet. We can still educate the American people. And in Montana and Wyoming and Idaho, I don't know if Idaho and Wyoming have really gotten aware of this thing going in Montana, but I'm sure that they will be. We the people are going to open that season on those wolves in western Montana, well, all over Montana, all across the board in Montana. We're going to open the season. And we're going to challenge the fish and game. We're going to challenge the state government. We're going to challenge the federal government. Don't you mess with we the people. We the people are going to do this because you have misused your power. You have put these wolves here without our consent. You did not have the consent of the governed to bring those wolves in here. And it's we've got, well, I'm reminded of that Rahm Emanuel, Obama's right-hand man. I don't remember the exact term, but he says, don't let an emergency, how was it? Don't let a, how did that go? You know, use an emergency. Don't let it go without, you know, gaining from it. They do that all the time. We've got an emergency in those three states, and they're moving into Oregon and Washington just as well. We the people have to take our power back, and we don't want to go to a militia. We don't want to go there. But we have leapfrogged across the grand juries and the juries. And we've got to get the message to the American people about the grand jury and the jury, and the message we're going to carry is, if the grand juries and the trial juries don't function properly, if they don't start to act as a check against the federal and against the state governments that get out of line, if they don't operate as a check, then you better be prepared for the militia, and it'll come along. We've still got our guns in this country, and they're selling guns every day at a rate never before in history. And so this is a message that we the people are sending this message out. We're sending this message, and right now I'm hoping that the people in Montana, and I think if Montana does it, Wyoming and Idaho are going to jump on the bandwagon because they're angry. They're being, you know, the ranchers are really up against it. And in Montana and Idaho, wherever these wolves are, the people living out there on the ranches and such, they have to bring their pets, their dogs and their cats, they've got to bring them inside, because those wolves are coming right in people's yards and taking their pets. And you can't, I mean, they're killing guard dogs and everything. And I have a friend that lives in the mountains out there. They had a little deck on their cabin. They live in a cabin 6 months out of the year. They're retired from, and they spend 6 months in Southern California, 6 months in Montana. They've got this little deck out there, and they had a chair there, and they had a towel hanging on the back of a chair. And they watched this wolf, right in broad daylight, come up on their deck, take that towel, and drag it off up the road. Now, this is where there's houses all over. When are we going to lose a kid? When are they going to go to kids? When they can't find cattle, moose, deer, and elk to eat, what's going to stop them from grabbing a kid? You're going to have your kid in the house all the time. You're going to have a fence around your place. This is the kind of a desperate situation we're in, and you're not hearing a word about it from the counterfeit media that we have. And boy, it's It's an opportunity we've got in Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming to educate people about juries and grand juries. And, of course, now I've said my piece. About 1991 or two, a rancher killed a grizzly. And he was bragging about it, and so he got the attention of the government, the feds, and they prosecuted him in federal court in Great Falls, Montana. And the jury, the guy claimed self-defense, and it was really a humorous kind of thing because it wasn't self-defense at all. Because he was in his pickup chasing this grizzly, and he shot it with his pistol. But anyway, the jury took the case and went out and come back right quick, not guilty. There's the evidence. We have power, but we got to learn to use it. Okay.
Red, Kate would like to make a comment, and then I want to get back to talking to Dan and Gene and to Jim. But Kate, you want to jump in on this?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. And Red, thank you for that fabulous idea. And perhaps my comments will segue back into the Third Continental Congress because that inspired a number of ideas. Wyoming, I'm sure, has not heard about that. But I know people would be very, very interested in doing this because it is a serious problem. There is only one pocket of quote-unquote environmentalists, or maybe two pockets in the state, and there's the Western Watershed Project that's based in Wyoming, so they are always suing for wolf protection and so forth. And there was an open hunt this year, lots of wolves were killed and so forth. But where I'm going with this is with regard to the Third Continental Congress, and just as an aside, this wildlife introduction, if you look at where it's gone, it's a corridor. It's a corridor, and under the guise of providing for migration corridors for bears, wolves, so forth and so on, and also under the guise of climate change, huge swaths of land have been set aside to do this. And if you look at that, it's from Mexico to Canada. Hello, this is the area. So from the standpoint of the Third Continental Congress, I can absolutely see we did not actually talk about land management except with respect to the quote-unquote New World Order, which you really can get down to specifics, fishing and, what's happening on the Gulf Coast right now with the BP spill and so forth and so on. This might be a way to not only draw attention, or the Third Continental Congress could be involved in these issues on policies, but also to recommend the taking of power back. This is a very real way to not only take your power back, but to stop the New World Order, which is bent on providing that corridor, transportation corridor, between Mexico and Canada. So thank you, Red. Great idea. I'll talk more with you about that. And Terry, I hope that provided a segue back into the Third Continental Congress. Thanks.
Thank you, Kate. Well, Dan, I'd like for have you got a comment at this point?
Terry, I'm really just taking all this in. I really enjoyed what everyone's had to say, including the gentleman who came on. I apologize, I don't remember his name. The gentleman
Jim,
that was talking
Jim Borland.
About Jim. Okay,
Jim Borland.
Right, and of course, Dr. Kate, one of my favorite people, always just talks shares her thoughts so eloquently. But what Red Beckman was saying there, I guess I want to ask Red a question. I need to ask Red a question because I feel that I totally agree. I think his whole what he's been trying to educate his fellow American on, and all of us, the grand jury, the trial jury, we need to, get on those juries and say not guilty when we know that the person's being, prosecuted in violation of their rights. But, you know, but the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, is forever standing. And he referred to it, Mr. Beckman, you referred to it as, you know, we're leapfrogging over that. I didn't express myself clearly before enough before. I meant that we need to have a militia, that we need to be a well-regulated militia, that we need to be obviously training, you know, well-regulated means to be trained, supplied, so that we are ready to be used at any time. Obviously, I don't see any difference, to be honest with you, with anyone, that any difference between myself and the militia, my neighbors and the militia, we're all in the militia because the militia is we the people. It is us. In our country, in this country here, we can't separate that. I don't see where we separate it. So, but I was going to make a little joke and say, well, you know, if you guys are going to go out and, if Montanans are going to go out and shoot wolves, maybe we don't need to go out and shoot pedophiles or these people that are, because I guess maybe the militia in Montana is going to go out and shoot wolves, right? But what are we going to do with these on a bigger scale? What are we going to do with all these pedophiles that are kidnapping children and murdering them and raping them? And to me, this is and it's not to say that the wolf problem up there in the Northwest isn't a huge problem. I can understand that and see that. But I'll tell you what, if I had children, I saw a wolf coming into my yard getting too friendly, I'd shoot him anyway. And then, I'd protect my children at any cost. But because you're right, it's only a matter of time before children are being dragged away or will be killed. But again, the children are already being killed by men. You know, we have abortion clinics in this country. We have tolerated murder, mass murder in this country. All of us. I mean, I'm guilty of it. I've tolerated it. You know, you remember the gentleman, I think he was down here in Florida. We've had a couple of guys down here in Florida who have taken a step forward and actually eliminated the doctors that were killing these, you know, performing all these abortions. And to be honest with you, when they did that, I admired him for it. I said, you know, wow, these guys are, you know, they really do believe. They really do believe in giving their life to save the life of another, because how many children were spared once those doctors were no longer butchering those unborn children? And I don't look at it as, you know, I've had people say, well, you can't say that as, yes.
Dan, you have to remember that it was juries that convicted those people.
That's true.
That is where the problem is, as far as I'm concerned. And the pedophiles, the grand juries, we just don't have the people investigating, the people getting the evidence, these pedophiles, and taking it to a grand jury, because the grand juries have been put out of reach by the Justice Department. I tried my best in that book, Why the Militia, to make it so that people would understand that the checks and balances of the grand jury and the trial jury, they were supposed to be the final checks in the system that would keep the system honest. It would keep it righteous and all of that. And when it fails, why then the militia comes into play. And of course, the big thing about the well-regulated militia, as far as I'm concerned, is that in our country, we've got over 25 million veterans of military service. What does that mean? We've got people that are trained, millions of them. And so I really haven't had, I've had some discussion with our lawyer friend there in the Washington, D.C. area about the militia, and I really appreciate his study and his research. because it is so solid. But we just aren't at that point yet. It's coming if we don't get the grand juries and the juries. But I don't want to see this where we have to do it with the militia. I don't want to see that. I think the founders gave us a system that is so solid that it'll work if we just, you know, put our effort into it.
Well, I don't think any of us, I would agree with you on that, Red. I don't think anyone wants to see blood in our own streets. In fact, you know, wherever I've, you know, shared my ideas in front of audiences, I've always made that statement. We don't want, the reason why we're doing what we're doing right now, the whole reason for the Third Continental Congress is so that we don't have to get to that point. Hopefully we can change the minds of men and convict them to take action and to become involved and to have the desire to learn. And because many people need to learn, they don't know anything about this Republican form of government, how it was established. They believe they live under a democracy, and you know, so there's a lot of education that needs to go along with that. Of course, I know you understand that better than most because you've been doing it for so many years. My thoughts on this are, you know, let me ask you a question, because this is a great conversation, and we just had a grand jury, by the way, in New York and Harlem, where Pastor Manning, David James Manning, convened a grand jury. Now, I don't know how he did it. I don't know that much about how you would organize one, but I guess it was done through the American Grand Jury Association. But he had a grand jury hearing on the eligibility of Barack Obama to be the president of the United States. And they indicted him with 17 counts. So there was a grand jury held. There was an indictments handed out. But now what? Now who enforces
that? What it proves is that the establishment, the Justice Department, and the judiciary, and our government, they're using our tax money, they are financed by our tax money, and all of that, but they have gotten so out of hand. We can't seem to get a grand jury. Now, there's grand juries in every state in the union. And they're there all the time. There's always grand juries there that are established by the system. And back in the early 80s, I had written in my first book how that we needed grand juries to investigate the Federal Reserve. Well, there was a grand jury, a regular impaneled grand jury by the Justice Department, and they indicted the Federal Reserve Bank. And the first time they indicted the Federal Reserve Bank, there was a guy on that grand jury that had an ego problem. And he didn't reach out and get help and advice from people that had the knowledge to do it. He was going to do it his way. And the grand jury went along with it. He was a pretty convincing type of a guy, and he got the rest of the grand jury to go with him. The U.S. attorney refused to accept the indictment. The grand jury went back and re-indicted again, and the second time the federal judge dismissed the indictment. Now, if the grand jury had been wised up and if they had been properly informed, when that U.S. attorney, when he dismissed that first indictment, they should have gone back into session immediately and indicted the prosecutor, the U.S. attorney, for not doing his job and for obstruction of justice. You see, but they didn't do that. They weren't up to speed. They didn't have enough information, and they didn't reach out to get the information that they needed. They thought they had it, and of course, the second time, the judge dismissed the whole grand jury, and of course they should have stayed right in session and indicted the judge. But they didn't do that. They disbanded, and the people didn't have enough foundation under them. They didn't have enough smarts, you might say, to know what to do, and so they blew it, and they blew it big time. And I'm talking about over 25 years ago. And here we are, we've gone 25 more years or so, and we still haven't accomplished a hell of a lot in all that time. And, of course, I really question myself. I must not be communicating with people well enough to where they understand that they've got a responsibility, everybody. The Continental Congress, you know, they're supposed to be representing we the people. And at least that was the idea I thought they had, that was what they were supposed to be doing. And
right.
You see, education has to be the key at this point in time. And, of course, now I'm talking too much again, so I'll shut up and let somebody else talk.
Personally, I don't think you were talking too much, Red, but that's how I feel about it. I think, you know, it's great that you bring your wisdom to, you're still, even at your age, reaching out and trying to help. I really admire you for that. And I know all of us do because...
We've got about 18 minutes left in this show if we do not extend. We may extend if we need to, but Gene hasn't spoken in a while. I'd like for Gene to make whatever comment you might like to, and then I'd like to get back to Jim Borland and talk a little bit about how we can incorporate this concept of the ensign, along with, we've already been incorporating the idea of grand juries and some things like that, but I think we need to further develop this and put something together that's cohesive where we can incorporate these things and actually start to take action through our civic action and our communications group, our public relations group, through Third Continental Congress, and we can use these ideas as an impetus for doing some of those things. So, Gene, do you have anything to add right now?
Well, I'd first like to start by commenting on the wolf situation. The state of Alaska has a wolf program that we are thinning the wolf population here through state-supported action. And we're being taken to task by a lot of people for that. It's as though the greenies think that we're shooting our pets out here, not eradicating some of the problems of our big game, which in the bush areas, the rural parts of Alaska, those moose are food on the table. And if the wolves are killing them, and they're literally killing the moose calves almost as soon as they're being born, and if we don't put a stop to that, there's going to be some serious complications in rural Alaska. Moose and caribou are big staples of rural populations' diets, along with fish, of course. And it is a big problem that at least our state is dealing with, but we are seriously under fire for doing it. Secondly, I would like to support what Red said regarding the juries. We need to educate people on jury nullification and the power of a grand jury. It is very powerful, but people need to understand what they can do and, as a jury member, what their responsibilities are and what the power of that jury is. As Red explained, when that jury was released, the jury should have indicted that judge that released them, but they didn't have the knowledge to do that. And we have to get people educated to the point where they know what their rights are and they know what their responsibilities are. And until we do that, we are going to have serious problems in trying to take our government back to a republic instead of the atrocity that it has become. And with that, Terry, I'll yield it back to you, but I'm still going to be here and available for any questions.
Thank you, Gene. And Jim, are you still with us?
Yeah.
Well, there's been a lot said. Yes, I hear you loud and clear. There's been a lot said. Would you like to fill in here maybe your thoughts before we get into a little bit more discussion about how we can incorporate things?
You kind of went digital on me, if you'll repeat that.
Yeah, what is your thinking based on what you've heard?
Well, as I blogged on the screen here a little while ago, I honestly believe our country's under judgment. And, you know, until we humble ourselves, as a nation, I really don't see things changing. You know, I believe in that ends, and I believe it's a powerful banner and standard. But if people can't see it, then it doesn't matter. You know, it's like I mentioned the other day, it's kind of like pushing a rope. And the jury idea that I need to be schooled on that. But, you know, how much time do we have to school ourselves? This thing looks like it could come unglued any minute. And we need a rallying point. We need a standard that the honorable of this land can flock to. I think the ends and serves that purpose. But I think the Lord is going to have to bring those people to it in his due time if he decides to do it. But we are really in some serious straits. And the biggest problem is that we, at this point in time, we really can't coalesce around anything.
Well, I believe we can.
Well,
and I believe that if we have faith in God and we go out and we take him with us and we have his spirit go before us in what we're doing, just like Pastor Manning wants to have people come to Washington, D.C. and march for 7 consecutive days around the Capitol. He's looking for people to do that right now. I believe that the Spirit of God is with that man, and I believe that his prayers and his open communication with the Lord is absolutely powerful. And I believe that I have that same ability, and I believe that every man that wants to take a stand and open his heart and his eyes and his ears to what God is directing them to do and then act on that, I believe that we can change things in this country. And I absolutely believe that even what you talked about earlier, Jim, was very, very powerful. It's stuff that we need to be thinking about as we move forward in every action that we take. And, you know, I appreciate what USMC said in the chat a while ago about, you know, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Well, we're not about vengeance. We are about being good stewards of the gifts that God has given us. And what Red has said is absolutely right on the money, too. There is a lot that we can do. Let me say this about the militia, or I should say the Second Amendment. I don't believe that the First Amendment has any teeth whatsoever in the absence of the Second Amendment. I want a strong and revitalized, well-regulated state militia so that we won't need to use it. Because if we don't have it, we're going to need it. And I don't want to need it. I want to have it and to be able to do all the things in the way and not jump over or leapfrog, like Red said, to doing things that are dumb, but we need to be strong and we need to be prepared, and then we need to be smart. And we need to do what God tells us to do. And God may tell us one day that we need to stand up and fight, but that would be the last thing, not the first. And I agree with what Red said on that. So, but I believe that we absolutely can lift up a banner. It's just like in a church. In a church, you've got to focus on Jesus. If you're not focused on Jesus in a church, that church isn't going anywhere, and whatever they do isn't going to be worth anything anyway. And in this country, the sovereign is God, and we got our rights from God, and we need to remember that in everything we do. But the banner that he's given us to hold high is the Constitution, and it's our job to defend it with God's blessing. Red, you were going to say something.
Yeah, the number one function of the militia at this point, I would say, is that the people educate, use the smarts that they're picking up and getting, you know, as far as the Constitution and the Second Amendment and all. It can be a vehicle to help educate people on their power on the grand jury and the jury. We don't want to let any power out there just lay there idly and not be involved in this process of informing the American people. Basically, I should say, of putting the truth out there where it is accessible to the people. We're not going to get the truth from the media in this country, and you're not going to get the truth from the churches. There's very few pulpits in this country that are feeding their congregations the truth. And so we have to recognize that there's just no source, for truth for the people of this country. And the militia, my goodness, that would be part of the well-organized militia, as far as I'm concerned. A well-organized militia would be telling people, hey, we don't want to have to use our Second Amendment weapons to protect ourselves from government. We want to do it the way it's supposed to be done, and that's with the grand juries and the juries being a check against the Congress, being a check against the judges, being a check against the Obamas and such that inhabit the White House. If our grand juries and juries were functioning properly, Obama would have never made it to the White House. He is the evidence, he's the prima facie evidence that the system isn't working, and the power is in the hands of we the people, but we aren't using it.
I certainly have to support that thought, and that's the problem that is probably the most pervasive that we face, is how to get the word out and educate people to the point that they will act also. So far, there are so few of us that are truly believing in what God is telling us to do that we are being largely ignored, and we will never hear our thoughts come out of the media. They are the enemy, and we just need to educate the people around us. Every one of us that believes need to educate the people around us and stir their activities.
Dan Gonzalez, we've got 4 minutes. You want to jump in here?
Had to mute myself there. I'm in agreement with everybody. I'm in agreement with everything that's going on. I think it's been a great discourse between all of us. and a lot of good ideas, a lot of wisdom here being shared. And obviously we face a very real enemy that's very cunning and baffling and powerful. And we need to, of course, first and foremost, submit ourselves to our Creator for His guidance and wisdom. And I think that's the key. Terry, you mentioned it. Everybody's really touched on it. And I know every one of us here is in agreement to that. That's why we're all here on your program right now. And, you know, I believe all things are possible to those who love the Lord. My promise is fulfilled already. I know I'm going home to be with the Father when this flesh here is no longer active. So I know that my promise is there. I'm not worried about it. But I still have a responsibility, you know. For some reason, you know, God put that in me, put it in all of us, that we have the responsibility of, even though we know where we're going when we leave here, still we tend to want to stick around a little bit longer and get things accomplished and do the next right thing. And, of course, we have our posterity to think of, and which we're concerned about. Our founding fathers were concerned about it. And our founding fathers, you know, I always kind of go back and look at what they did. I really go back and put myself in their shoes. How did they handle this? You know, they were men. You know, Patrick Henry, you know, gave his famous speech, "Give me liberty or give me death." You know, in that speech, you know, I've read that a few times, and I'll continue to read it. And every time I read it, I get more out of it, and I realize that, you know, he was a proactive man. He wasn't reactive. He was proactive, and he was trying to get his fellow Americans to be proactive and not reactive. You know, the rest of them, you know, we had the people there that, you know, we remember we were in St. Charles. We had those that didn't want us to use strong language, or they were afraid we were going to overstep our bounds. And, you know, and many of us thought that was totally absurd, because we said, overstep what bounds? We the people are in charge here. What do you mean, overstep what bounds? You know, any law that is repugnant to the Constitution, or any law that violates the Constitution, is repugnant. That's it. It doesn't even exist. It has never existed. So we have to, I believe, and this is apropos to your program, the name of your program, clear those walls in our minds and realize that we have the power. We have the power. Satan doesn't. The dark forces don't. We have the power. And I'm encouraged by that type of attitude, by the approach of a positive, uplifting, faith-filled attitude to move forward. And sure, you know something? Some of us might have to lose our lives, this flesh. We might have to lose it. It might have to be taken, because I really don't believe that anything worth anything comes for free. I believe that there's always a price to pay. And you know, I guess I'm willing to pay that price. I know that that you are, Terry, that Red Beckman is, that Dr. Kate is, Gene is, and this other gentleman also. You know, everybody's sticking their neck out in just by being here and talking about these. So I admire you greatly for that. We need to get more people, and I think that, of course, Terry, your idea of all of us reaching out and being accountable, I do believe that we are our brother's keeper. I really believe that. I don't believe any of us are an island unto ourselves. That's not Christian. Of the Lord, picked up and dusted off their
swords, about to set the captain. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, and thank you.
God bless you all. What if the church thank you.
If his people prayed, and those who bear his name would only seek his face, yeah, and turn from their own ways, and what
Terry, can you still hear me? Because the show is still on, so we must have extended it. Can you hear me? I guess not. No, I don't hear you. Are you talking? I think, let me see here.
Hello?
There you are. Everybody's there.
Hi.
You know, the show is still on.
Yes, it probably is it still on?
Yes, it is.
Gosh.
Yep.
Yep.
Hi, Terry.
And I did not have to call back in.
No. So
I'm still
we
on
had
too.
Extended it. So I'm
okay.
Sorry if there. I think if there's anyone still in the chat room, can you hear us? Because the show is still on. If you can, why don't you just put something in the chat? They're all away from the computer.
Yes.
Interesting.
Talula
okay,
says
so
I concur.
I concur. So I guess we know now that basically we can just extend but I think you did the right thing because I could not find a way to add any more than 120 minutes either. And
yeah.
I toyed with like adding 60, but then I thought I would like end the show prematurely if I did that.
Yeah, I just went in and I thought it would work because I think I did it over at Patriot's Heart one time. You just go in, add a new show, and have it start at the whatever the 2 hours would be. So I had started it at 9 o'clock, and just had it on the same day. So I don't know.
Okay. So because now what I found out in my show is that if you end it. Try to end it yourself earlier than what you scheduled, it will not end.
Oh, really?
Yeah, try hitting the end show now button and it won't work. I tried to do that.
Oh, I don't know.
Terry, I
never tried to do that.
Is there anyone in the chat? Not yet. Terry, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Okay, so what would you like to do?
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
Finish my dinner.
Okay. Bye.
actually, did you understand where I was trying to go with all of this? I mean, I'd like to see some of the outline and work that he's done, that Borland's done, is of value, and we need to implement it. We need to get that in as a part of our written plan of action. And begin to and take Red's concepts and some of the we've already got some of this already in what we're doing.
But oh, I agree.
We need to formalize it. We need to actually establish some goals, some specific goals, a mission statement, and get some stuff out there so that people can read it, and people can and then figure out what their part of it is. How can they be a part of it? How can we get people moving in action on specific things?
Do you see this as part of the Third Continental Congress as well?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay, well, because I agree, and I think that this meeting on June 6th that we have coming up on the bylaws, we can't stop there. We have to, in that meeting, say, okay, the next step is to have this next webinar, you know, on this issue. A game plan right away, in particular because I still have that big training thing where we can have, you know, more than 25 people and various breakout groups until about June 16th. So, that should be included on the agenda on Sunday.
We'll have an organic committee and have a pamphlet written out of what Jim said and get it to everybody.
Well,
you
not,
know,
just
have,
Jim, not just what Jim
right,
said.
Right, right,
what,
right.
What
but have an organic here. Committee. You know, have mm-hmm. a committee to form the organic, what is the a definition of the organic foundational principles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an outsider. I'm not part of it, but...
Oh well,
but yeah,
you're not an outsider, but
no,
yeah.
But I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not on the Congress, but that's what I would say. It sounds like it needs to be a committee finding, and you know, everybody add to it, and then have the findings of the committee, a report from the committee.
Mm-hmm.
But he's done a lot of research and a lot of good. There are a lot of good thoughts. It just needs to it needs more people's input than just him.
And we can, you know, because of the way our bylaws are, we can invite anybody in to help us formulate this. So we could very well have another webinar where he makes a presentation, we all discuss it, and, you know, come up with an action plan. He and other people with Red as well.
You know, we called Red faculty in St. Charles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I want to use the same term, but I think it would be good to maybe executive advisors or, so I don't know, something that would be a special classification for people we deem expert in certain
emeritus.
Areas that we,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Emeritus members.
Yes, I agree. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I agree.
Well, I'm thinking now instead of having one other non-voting classification, we need to have two.
Yep, that's what yep. So that's going in because I'm still working on the bylaws right now.
Well, can you have subject matter experts? You know, kind of like you call
yes.
in a, you know, somebody like on in a trial, you call in someone who's an expert on a certain subject and have them come in and present their knowledge and their study and then the committee can take that.
This is more permanent. This would be a more permanent sort of advisory piece, because we do have those subject matter experts that will come in and do presentations and so forth. But, you know, someone with Red and someone like Jim have really some long-term possibilities, you know, and we need this kind of guidance. So some category, whatever, but I agree, Terry. So this, you know, I'm going to raise this issue of our agenda on Sunday, tomorrow, and tomorrow night's meeting. So just would appreciate, you know, your direction on just setting up a robust agenda that will move through the bylaws, approve them, or send them back for more committee work, and then continue to move forward with the business of the Third Continental Congress within possibly a week, having a discussion as you just outlined.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, I've got family things I need to be taken care of, so I'm going to book out of here. But
all right. I'm going to try to end the show.
Good luck.
Okay. Good night, Mama Cooks. Thank you so much for your help
Good night.
This week, bud.
Thank you, Janet.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.